Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod. Back with us in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is Alamosa Police Chief George Dingfelder. Chief, it's good to see you. Let's start with the Avs.
Yes, sir.
The Colorado. Strong favorite to win this year's Stanley Cup. They swept the LA Kings round one of the playoffs Western Conference. Await either Dallas or Minnesota. Handicap it from their fours.
So I'll tell you, my biggest concern is that we won the President's Cup. If you look at the history of the President's Cup, which is the President's Cup is given to the team with the best record, so that gives them home ice advantage all the way through the playoffs. However, when they started it, President's Cup, I believe it was 1989, is when they went to this concept that if you have the best record, you you get home ice advantage all the way through and you win the President's Cup. Only eight teams have gone on, have won the President's Cup and gone on to win the Stanley Cup. And I think the last one was 2012. So
that's a good statistic. Good job pulling that one out. Very nice.
Not a big fan of the President's Cup.
So Dallas or Minnesota, you have a preference there for the Avs next round?
I don't like either one of them. So, the Stanley Cup, they say, is the hardest trophy in professional sports to win, and rightfully so. I don't like Dallas at all. I feel like Mikko Rantanen, you know, who was traded from, Colorado to Carolina and then to Dallas, but he has a way of...
Rubs you the wrong way.
He has a way of exploiting us because he knows everything about the team, right? I mean, great player, though, phenomenal player. But I don't know. I really, at the end of the day, it's going to be tough either way, so they're going to have to go through. And that's what it's about is the toughest team. I would prefer Minnesota just because, but I really, at the end of the day, they're going to have to do what they got to do.
Okay, we'll check in with you in a few weeks' time to see how the Avs finish this year's favorite cup, though, Stanley Cup favorite. But that's a good data point you pulled out there, Chief. Impressive. What else is top of mind for you other than the Avalanche right now? In May 1. We're going May. We're in May. So what's top of mind for you?
Yeah, you know, I think we're coming up on the summer months. I think historically anywhere, the summer months tend to see crime rise a little bit just because a lot of people are more outside and stuff like that. However, we're doing phenomenal. The city is doing phenomenal on crime stats. Last year we had like a 28% reduction of violent crimes in the city, which was, and you had, I think Captain Birch was here with me last time that we were in here. So we had a 28% reduction of violent crimes, which is homicides, robberies, assaults or aggravated assaults, sexual assaults, things like that. We're still down so far this year. We're still trending in the right direction, still continuing to go down. And property crimes, shoplifting, things like that, that's kind of pretty leveled out. So I always, what we can do for the community. And then, of course, traffic. With summer brings a lot more traffic into the city and into the valley and stuff. So those are always things that we're always concentrating on this time of the year.
One thing I just want to note this or mention this or ask you this about traffic, and because this is something I'm always saying in here, telling Owen, because I'm on State Avenue a lot, and sometimes I walk, sometimes I ride my bike, sometimes I'm driving, but I'm on State Avenue a lot, coming through 5th, 6th, Main Street, etc. With the hotel construction happening now, and then with the eventual opening of that hotel there at State, 6th, Main, around that area, the jaywalking that occurs across State from west to east, east to west, I'm just going to predict someone's going to get hurt someday, because that's becoming a pretty congested corridor.
It is.
Even for a bicyclist. I don't know if you've observed that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And I don't know if there's anything you can do. I'm just pointing that out.
Yeah, no.
As someone who travels there, that I'm saying, I keep telling no one, someone's walking across there. It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's a violation. Jaywalking is, you need to go down to the intersections, use the crosswalk. That's what they're there for. It protects you. Because if you get hit mid-block, it does, one, it's you don't get any protection. You know, at least you've got the lights and the crosswalks to use. But yeah, jaywalking is, but I see that on Main Street every now and then. Not near as bad though. People park on the south side and then want to walk over to like the brewery or something like that. They just walk across without using the crosswalk, but that's not safe. That's not safe. And you're right. I think with the traffic and stuff, and then I'm sure that those intersections will probably be repainted and everything too once we get and then they got the alley project. Public Works is redoing the alley project there too, so I'll talk with Harry about that as well.
A lot of good activity happening downtown. I want to ask you something that we've been reporting. AlamosaCitizen.com, as you know, we've been reporting on the ICE holding facility just a few blocks south of us here on State Avenue. And I've been asking ICE about the facility. I've sent them questions, dug through data. And I understand that you and the city manager, Heather Sanchez, recently were allowed inside to tour it or get a look inside. What were your observations from that? What did you see?
Yeah, I think city manager Heather, she described it very well. I don't know if you saw the city council meeting where she described that it's a very clean, very neat, very professionally in the inside. It's there's three cells, two of them, if I remember right, they do at least have a toilet. There's no beds. They reassured us that it's just temporary holding, no more than 12 hours unless there's, you know, like a pass is closed or something like that. But and I will tell you, I was a little bit surprised, but then again, maybe not, when this all started coming out that there was a nice holding facility here or transfer facility that people didn't know about it. In fact, I think you were one of them that probably brought it forward, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've known about that facility since forever, for like 2000. I remember back at least early 2000s when I was still with State Patrol. And in fact, for a while, State Patrol, at the time, it was an INS facility, the Immigration Naturalization Service facility. And then when they changed the name and went under Department of Homeland Security, then it became an ICE facility. But yeah, it's been there. And you know, the thing is, it's very low key. They, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you agree with it or not, whatever. But that facility has been there, yeah, well over 20 years.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm not sure about how long that facility's been there when I think through my years. But, you know, I grew up here. I'm 65 years old, so I grew up here where we are, right? And I remember the buses that would take people away after they brought them into whatever was over there. I always remember buses being back in that area. I mean, in the summertime, growing up here in the 60s and the 70s in Alamosa, the San Luis Valley, growing up in the summertime, it wasn't unusual, Chief, to see, because there was a lot of lettuce fields, a lot of workers. It wasn't unusual to see ICE or whoever it was at the time come in and do these types of roundups of farm workers, and they'd put them in a bus over here on State Avenue, and they would bus them out.
I had no idea that they did that.
What I didn't know though was that they turned it into a holding cell facility, and some of the data has indicated that they've had people in there 24 hours plus.
I think we saw that too. But yeah, we met with them, you know, the local agents, and they're very professional, very very low key. Like I said, the facility was very clean, very neat, very well lit. And you know, I mean, I remember back in the day when I'm again early 2000s when that started, if I remember right, I believe that was like a Forest Service or a BLM office.
Right.
And then then INS at the time took it over and stuff. Yeah. And at the time they only had one or two agents here, and they've been here at least as long as that.
Yeah. No concerns that, as far as you're concerned right now, you would say that you're satisfied, the city's satisfied. I know they put ICE on notice that if you ever change the use, whatever, but things for you seem okay. You're satisfied with what you've seen.
Yeah. Yep. We're satisfied with what we've seen.
And just speaking about State Avenue, because It was great growing up on State Avenue. I'm going to tell you, in the 60s and 70s, Chief, because it was always been a busy corridor. Mm-hmm. But just up the road, we used to have the Coca-Cola bottling plant. They used a bottle, make Coca-Cola, right there where the green spot is, where
Ruthie
there
is.
Used to be a Coca-Cola bottling, a whole facility, manufacturing.
No,
you'd work in there, the bottles would go around, they'd make the Coke, they'd ship it out, had a all kinds of different operations on State Avenue. That was good times. We're going to take a break. This is the Valley Pod. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. CHFA supports Colorado home ownership and works with a statewide network of lenders. Visit chfainfo.com/your home. CHFA is an equal housing lender. Looking for the freshest food in the Valley? Introducing the new SLB Local Foods Directory, where you can meet your neighbors and eat better. From colorful potatoes and crisp greens to farm fresh eggs, dairy, and meat, find exactly who grows your food right here in the Valley. Support local, eat fresh, and strengthen our community. Are you a local farmer or producer? Add your information. Visit elmasacitizen.com today and discover the freshest food from the heart of the Valley.
Hey, we're back. This is the Valley Pod. We're talking to Alamosa Police Chief George Dingfelder. Before we keep that conversation, I just want to invite anyone listening to this podcast. And I got to say, Chief, that when we have you on as a guest, we do see our bigger downloads, our bigger listening audience, because I think people like to hear from you. Alamosa Citizen, May 11th and Tuesday, May 12th, is hosting an event we'd like to invite you to. It's called Truth Be Told. It's a film screening and a community conversation offering an inside look at how we verify facts, Chief, how we talk to people like you, how we make decisions, or what stories we report on, or how we find stories. We're going to talk about those types of things. We're going to do this Monday, May 11th from 6 o'clock to 8 at the Church Project in Monta Vista. Then we're going to do it again Tuesday, May 12th at the Shooting Stars Cultural and Leadership Center. That's at 807 Ross Avenue. We're going to do that from 6 to 8, Tuesday, May 12th. I want to invite the Chief to that.
Yep.
Invite everyone to come by and just have a conversation about the work we do, how we do it, and how we are fortunate and privileged to be able to have public officials like you in here and talk about what's happening in your world. So join us May 11th or May 12th.
Yeah, I will say it's kind of refreshing when you, like with the media especially, right? You know at the local level that it's a lot more accurate than what you see at the national level. Some of those big news channels just want nothing to do with them watching because they're so far out there.
You know, another thing Alamosa Citizen's been reporting on, I want to get your perspective on this, Chief, and there's conversations and a push coming from elected county officials to ask voters here in November to do away with term limits tied to the 12th Judicial District Attorney's Office. One of the reasons county commissioners will give is the difficulty the Valley's had in finding qualified candidates for that elected office as DA. I just want to ask you, not about term limits per se or the question, but really give us some perspective on the office of district attorney, the role a DA plays in a community, in a region, from your perspective, your experience in law enforcement. You're a veteran there.
Yeah, I agree absolutely with that. That perspective that it's very difficult. And I look back over the years, I think when I started here in 95, I believe Kathy Mullins was the district attorney. Doug Privavera had just left office, still a local attorney, but then Kathy Mullins was the DA. And then I think it went on to Bob Pastore. And I just look back. Now, I will say, that one of the arguments that is you hear is right is that it's hard to recruit good quality attorneys and to keep them here and stuff because of pay. I mean, they can go to Front Range and make almost twice, but the role of the DA obviously is so important in controlling crime. And I will tell you, well, we've seen the extremes here in the Valley, right? I mean, we've, unfortunately we had what went on a few years ago. And then now DA Kelly is doing an amazing job. Her and her staff are doing they're great to work with. They're very responsive. But I will tell you, like, you look at some of the like a handful of our current judges, Judge Mike Gonzalez, right? He came here recruited. I think Bob Pastore's recruited him, and now he's a district judge. And there's been others over the years that have come here to either work at the DA's office and went on. Krista Neumeyer Olson, I mean, she's a local kid, but again, she was the elected DA and went on. But yeah, I mean, the DA is just such an important role.
From my experience too, you're talking about different DAs, and I remember DAs I've worked with in my journalism career, Beth McCann,
yep.
District Attorney in Denver. When I was covering that area, talked to her a lot, but you don't see. To what you were saying about the movement you see, career movement of district attorneys, you don't see them saying in career as the district attorney. You don't see a lot of examples of career DAs that are coming to my head. I might be wrong about that. And you just cited several before the challenges.
Yeah, I believe they're term limited to two, right? So yeah. 8 years, and you see that constant turnover, whereas, take the public defender's office. Well, and the other thing with the DA's office is they're funded at the local level through the counties. That's where they get their funding, whereas like the public defender's office, that's funded through the state. So the state pays their salary, and then they have offices all over. And there's been argument, I've heard this argument over the years, that the district attorney should that it should be a state funded position, just like the legislators set the salary for the DA, they set it for I believe the sheriff and some of the other elected officials, yet there's no funding on it. But then you got the public defender's office, which is funded the state. I mean, they all have important roles, right? I mean, we want to make sure that everybody has access to justice.
Would you see an advantage? Because, again, you've been around a while in law enforcement. Would you see an advantage a career DA would have versus a DA who doesn't have unlimited terms afforded to them?
Yeah, great question. I see the advantages of... I also believe in limited government to a point, right? I think sometimes government oversteps their boundaries, and they look at Congress. I think there should be term limits in Congress, but I think there's got to be you kind of got to evaluate it. And really, at the end of the day, if there are no term limits, at the end of the day, we all have a say in that. We can vote, and if this person's not doing a good job, or if they're doing a good job, I think the citizens of that area should have. They're the ones that should be the voice that decides that, not set by some preterm limit. So
it'll be an interesting conversation that we hear at the different county commissioner chambers over the next period of month for this to get to a ballot in November. All six counties in the Valley commissioners have to agree in their individual chambers to put it on the ballot for their county. And then it has to be done by July 24th to get to this November's ballot. And then if it gets to a ballot, each individual county, Alamosa, Costilla, Conejos, Sawatch, Mineral,
and Rio Grande,
each county has to majority approve the question.
Interesting.
If five of the six approve it, doesn't work. All six have to approve it at their level. That's interesting.
Is interesting.
We're in the election season. We'll keep talking about election politics as we keep moving forward. Appreciate the chief coming in and give us some of his time. Good to see you again.
You too.
The Valley Pod is produced by Owen Woods and is part of the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. Go Avs, Chief. We'll see you around the Valley.
All right. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Marty Jones, host of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. Join us every other Wednesday as we talk to outdoor enthusiasts, wildlife experts, recreationists, lovers of the outdoors, and people who spend their days and their lives outside. On the Outdoor Citizen, we talk all things outside and outdoors, provide you with the latest data and measurements for water and weather, give you upcoming outdoor events, and keep you up to date on the latest news. The Outdoor Citizen is brought to you by the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, enjoy the out of doors.